Welcome to episode 26 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. All of Your Business is a proud recipient of a 2020 X-Ray FM Podcast Award. X-Ray FM, purpose-driven media at 91.1 FM and 107.1 FM. You can also find them at xray.fm. On this episode, we're excited to welcome Chef Tui Pham of Mama Dute Foods. And now your host, Michael Jonas.
So thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I love your purple hair.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I like to, you know, change it up often.
Yeah, what colors? Kind of all different colors?
Yeah, just all different colors. I just, especially now with, like, we all wear face masks, so people have, like, been noticing me by my hair color, so it's nice to be incognito sometimes.
yeah, absolutely. Oh, I see. So if you have a different color, they don't know it's you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Or it's a little harder to differentiate.
Nice. So I've, as I told you when you walked in, you know, I've been fangirling you and really impressed with what you're doing.
Oh, thank
you. And caring about community. And then I kind of just want to talk to you first about how you opened Mama Dute. I know you were or are still a hairdresser.
Yeah, I mean, it's loosely used, that term now, but yes.
So yeah, tell me a little bit about your company and how you opened it.
Okay, so I'm the owner of Mama Dute, and I started it last April when, you know, businesses got shut down due to COVID. I was working as a stylist, and I was discovered myself out of work and couldn't really provide for my daughter. And that was like one of many all different kinds of worries going through my head, on top of like she was out of school, trying to keep her entertained, and also what am I going to do to keep my following of customers on Instagram like engaged, because now there's no content creation, you know, all of these different directions. And first and foremost, my daughter's sanity. She is 8 years old. Last year she was 7 and needed a lot of entertainment. And so we just took the time that we got off to cook together. She loves to cook together, and she always wanted to be on, to have like a YouTube cooking show. She was super into YouTube back then, you know, and I thought, oh, okay, well, this will be a fun thing and keep her entertained. And so we just started cooking on my Instagram, like doing Instagram lives and doing little videos of us cooking and posting it onto Instagram. It kept her entertained and it kept my clients engaged. Win-win.
And these are mostly hairstyle clients?
Yeah. Okay. And like friends and family, you know. Very small following compared to what Mama Dute is now. And I, at the time, you know, was trying to like rediscover like veganism within like Vietnamese cuisine. And so, of course, you know, you have all this time. And so I was pouring myself into cookbooks and watching YouTube tutorials on how to make pork belly, because I used to go to this, I still do, there's this Vietnamese vegan place called Van Han, and they make a certain type of pork belly, and I was so in awe by it, and I was like, I gotta learn this. And so took the opportunity and quickly learned that like the only YouTubes really out there on how to teach this was in Vietnamese. So I also like rediscovered my language, which was great.
And do you understand Vietnamese pretty well?
I do. Or? You know, I thought I did, but then like as I was watching these videos and I was like watching it from watching people speak from like different regions of Vietnam, I realized that I might not be as much of an expert as I thought. But you know, I can hold my own. And so, you know, I watched these videos and I was like, Kinsley, let's try making vegan pork belly. And literally it was just, there wasn't much thought to it. I was like, let's live stream this. Oh, she suggested it actually. She was like, Mama, we should go live. And I was like, oh, okay, that'll be fun for you. We'll go live. So I went live and we were like, okay, we're going to attempt vegan pork belly. I had no idea there was a market for vegan pork belly. It was just, I was trying to keep my kid entertained. And so it was so crazy. Like, people were just commenting on my live and they're like, oh my God, that looks amazing. And like, yeah, we ate it and they're like, what the crap? Like, oh my God, we were freaking out. And people were like, can we buy this? Like, you know, and I was like, oh, well, yeah, a whole batch made way more than I can eat. Like, I have, like, if any, you know, buddy wants, I have a few left, DM me. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, people DM'd me.
And what are, like, people doing? I mean, they're making it into a banh mi, or you're putting, yeah, it in soups?
Yeah,
or what,
so
are
anything
they?
That you use pork belly for, people were, like, using it in stir fries, using it in banh mis, using it in, you know, little buns, because, you know, I quickly learned. So the first week, I sold, like, I had, like, over, like, 100 requests for, wow, like, slabs. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, I can't keep doing this in my home. I quickly had my sister, like, create a Mama Doot account, mm-hmm, Instagram account, and I quickly got, like, a business license and, like, quickly, like, had my sister create a logo for me. And because I didn't, it was just, like, really reactive. So I feel bad when people give me, like, all this credit, because I really was just trying to survive.
Sure.
It was, like, none of it was planned.
Sure, but part of that might be that your past issues and risk taking allowed you to try that,
yeah,
and then,
like, yeah,
and then when it did well, you were like, okay, I'm a businesswoman.
Yeah,
I need,
okay,
to get,
yeah, this is what I'm gonna do. Yeah, so I within like 3 weeks, I secured a license and a commercial kitchen, moved into that, and was like basically operating out of the kitchen. And while I was getting all that together, I was making sales via Instagram. Mm. My sister would put it on a spreadsheet for me. And at the time, it was like pickup, local, you know, local pickup or delivery. So I would drive around town and do contactless delivery. And that was like, you know, I did that like a couple weekends. And then I was like, no, I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. Like, no. And then luckily, I quickly was able to like secure a kitchen shortly after where people could like pick up, and that saved me the trouble of like...
And that was the commercial kitchen, or that was a different one?
That
or?
Was the commercial kitchen, okay. Yeah, over by the Lloyd Center.
How did you find that commercial kitchen?
Okay, so that was really funny. Okay, interesting story. Everything is such an interesting story. So my friend who runs Portland Chili Company had known this person who had, they were friends with this, her husband was friends with somebody who made pickles, and he was working out, operating out a commercial kitchen. And she had gave him some of my pork belly, and he really liked it, and he had wanted some samples, and so I like came by there and gave him some samples. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll, you know, come by and we can talk business after I go check out this commercial space. And he was like, oh, you're looking for space. Well, I have space. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I need space. And so, yeah, we were able to work out a deal. And then shortly after that, actually, I got a really sweet offer from Aaron, the owner at Farm Spirit, to then allow me to operate out of his location that was at the time closed. So it's been such a wild, like, it's been such,
that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And during a pandemic.
I know. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did, how did the concept of the branding come about? Do you want to talk about that? Like,
yeah.
Who is Mama Doot? Does it means something about feeding, or?
Yeah. So Doot in Vietnamese means to feed.
Okay.
And my daughter, when she was young, I would always be like, hey, Kinsley, Mama Doot. Like, if I'm in the garden, like, I want her to try something, or like if I'm making something new and I want her to try something, I'm like, Kinsley, you know, mumming, Mama Doot, you know? And then it even became this thing where like she became lazy. Anytime she became lazy to feed herself, she would like then tell me, Mama Doot. So it
like
was just,
Mama feed me.
Yeah. And so it just became like a household phrase in our house. And a friend of mine had pointed out what a cute phrase that was. And I was like, yeah, it would be perfect for a food, you know, a food thing if I ever did one. And I thought, oh, it would be cool if I did a YouTube channel with Kinsley at some point, because she was so into it, you know? And so I just, like, registered the name with the state, thinking that it maybe became, might become, like, a something for her, for us to do, like, you know, a cookbook or just something fun. Had no idea it would end up being this. And so when my sister, I remember it was, like, that week, I was like, Kathy, I need you to create an Instagram handle. She's like, well, what do you want me to call it? I was like, I don't know. I was like, oh, call it Mama Dude. Yeah, we're going to call it Mama Dude. Mama Dude Foods. And it was just like, I mean, everything happened so fast. And then she asked me, she's like, well, what do you want your logo to be? And I was like, I want it to be an illustration of Kinsley with buns. Because at that time, I used to, you know, do buns for her all the time. She's like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, I literally took out a scrap piece of paper, a pencil that I had nearby, and I drew a circle, two little circles, and then, like, lines for chopsticks. And I was like, I want that, but, like, Kinsley, so you can tell it's Kinsley.
Yeah, it's cute. So it's her eating.
Yeah, and so with it, like, the next day, my sister sent back a rendering of, you know, the logo, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. Let's run with it. And
sounds like you have a really kind and talented sister.
I do. My sister's amazing. Like, it's interesting. Like, I definitely would not have gotten this up and going without her, and it just worked out perfectly because she was also off of work at the time. So she had all this free time to help me, which I was so grateful for. And then now I'm able to actually... Now I'm at a point in the business where I can actually afford to hire her to come move back to Portland to work with me now. So
where is she at, or where was she?
She's in LA. Okay. And she was working in fashion down there. You know, now I remember I called her one day and was like, hey, what are you getting paid right now? And I'm like, what if I match your salary? Would you come back? And it felt really good to be able to, do that, you know? She's actually moving back May 4th, so.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was your childhood like, you know, with your sister? Do you have other siblings as well?
Yeah, so I have, I'm the oldest of three. I have a younger brother who's 38. And I have my sister. She's in my sister Kathy. She's in her 30s, younger 30s.
I don't blame you. I forget how old I am. I forget how old my brother is.
But you know, we grew up, my mom was a single mom.
And are you from LA, or where are you from?
I was born in Vietnam.
Okay.
I was born in Vietnam, and my family escaped in 81. Left Vietnam in 81, and we spent about a year in an Indonesian refugee camp. We were boat people, we were sponsored over to Portland, actually, at the time. And we came to Portland in 82.
So you would have been a couple years old?
Yeah, I was only a couple years old at the time. And we lived in Portland for a few years and then moved to California. And then, like, we settled, kind of moved all over California, and then ended up settling in, you know, Southern California and the Orange County, LA area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, moved back to Portland in 96 to be closer to, my mom wanted to be closer to family up here.
Oh, okay. So some of the family had stayed, and then.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, we still had, at the time, her brother and sister still lived up here and stuff like that. So it just, we needed to be closer to family and stuff.
And did your mom ever cook, or were you?
My mom cooked a lot, and, like, being the oldest, she was a single mom and worked a lot. And so, like, being the oldest, I was always, you know, I don't want to say that, like, I was forced to help her, because it, like, didn't feel forced. It was just, like, a responsibility of being a part of the family. And so I was always, I mean, I remember being my sister, you know, being around and being firstborn and like making rice, helping my mom make rice and things like that, you know, and like washing vegetables. That's something that, you know, you can, you know, you learn and stuff. And so I always spent time cooking with my mom, and that's really how I learned to cook. And like kind of my understanding of Vietnamese cuisine comes a lot from like seeing my mom cook, what my mom cooks and stuff when I was younger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what's interesting about food is there's a generational component, there's a cultural component, like everything's sort of there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like, you know, there's this word authentic, right? And it is like what's authentic to you may not be authentic to me. And it all really comes down to like where we were raised. Like, you know, I cook Vietnamese food very differently than like somebody who was born and raised in Vietnam. I'm aware of that, you know? And I think so much of how we cook is, you know, because of how we grew up, what we like, what we were taught as kids or what we ate and learned, you know? I feel like there's a big change in like cultural cuisine that where like you see more like Asian American twists or like Latin American twists to it, because you have these new generations of chefs who, you know, may have been maybe like me, born in Vietnam, but really grew up in America.
Sure.
And so the cuisine that we cook is influenced by all of that.
Sure. And so does that mean that you kind of add things that they may not be added?
I would definitely say so. You know, like there's a lot of stuff that I cook that should have, for instance, peanuts, you know, but I don't use peanuts in my cooking because it's so many people have allergies to it. It's just not something that I do. So I, you know, created a similar, I use fried shallots in a lot of, you know, my dishes and a replacement of where peanuts should be. And it's, you know, still a flavor profile that's used in Vietnamese cooking, but it's just used in a different way to accommodate the needs that we have now in our culture.
Talk to me about, so, you know, I know you cook vegan food. Is that becoming more popular in the Vietnamese community? I'm trying to picture, because I know, like, there's this question of, is the pork as good? Is the fish as good? How do you make vegan fish?
Yeah.
You know, so I sort of, like, it sounds like people are more open to that more than ever. Mm-hmm. And then I know, for example, the vegan food market here is really popular.
Yeah, I think if you look at Vietnamese cuisine, historically, where it started, there's a big, big veganism culture within it because of Buddhism and because of Chinese influences in Vietnamese culture as well. You know, the techniques of like washing flour to become seitan and making mock meats. A lot of those techniques, you know, came from like China and was brought to Vietnam. And so, you know, Buddhist temples in Vietnam have been cooking vegan food for centuries. And with, and this is just my observation and understanding, is it's like, then you have French colonization of Vietnam and, you know, the rise in Catholicism in the country and the changes in dietary options and needs. You have less Buddhism. So, and then meat consumption also becomes, you know, a sign of, you know, wealth. And it's, you know, elitism that is associated with it, you know? And so it becomes kind of like this desired consumption. And so I feel like modern day Vietnamese cuisine is very heavily, you know, filled with animal proteins. But if you look to its historical, Vietnam's history, cuisine culture and its history, the veganism food. And so like, that's how I learned, like if that's how, you know, how I learned to cook Vietnamese vegan food was to, you know, watch YouTube tutorials of like Buddhist monks cooking and things like that. And I think it's only, I think that it's only recently that people in America have been introduced to vegan Vietnamese food. And I think a large part of it is because if you look at, you know, the people who were cooking Vietnamese food in the earlier days, you know, they were probably mostly immigrants coming over here trying to acclimate and fit in to the culture. And they see Americans here eating burgers, steaks, and fries. And so if they want to open a restaurant, then they're going to cater their food to the American palate.
Sure.
Which, to no fault of their own, you know. And so I used to hear so often, like, aunties and uncles who, like, talking about, oh, they're going to open a restaurant, what are they going to sell? And I'm like, oh. And a lot of times they're like, oh, we can't sell that. Americans won't eat that.
You like know? Tripe and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, things like that. Certain things. Just like, oh, we can't sell that. Americans won't eat that. Or like, Americans won't eat that. And like, even with my own mom, like, when I like tell her, like, oh, I want to do this. And she's like, oh. She'll say it in Vietnamese, which like, it sounds even worse. She'll be like, the Americans aren't going to eat that.
And that I'm makes like, a lot of sense because it's the other way too.
Yeah.
And I've told my boyfriend about this. Like, a lot of Asian places, they will have for... This sounds bad, but for mm-hmm. the white people,
yeah.
you know, they'll have egg rolls, they'll have fried,
yeah.
they'll have chicken fried rice,
mm-hmm.
they'll have a hamburger for the kids on
yeah.
the kid menu.
Yeah, and it's I think that for us, you know, the generation of food owners who came before us did that in order to survive, in order to get their footing in the
sure.
you know, market. But that means that that's, you know, it just means that it's our responsibility as the next generation, because they paved this way for us, to then, you know, speak up mm-hmm. about what we need to see change. And so when I cook Vietnamese vegan food in the way that I want to eat it,
yeah.
and if people don't want to eat it, then there's plenty of other restaurants that they can go to. But I feel like it would be untrue to myself if I didn't cook it that way.
Sure. And it is really exciting that there are varieties of vegan food.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be when I thought about, you know, eating tofu or soy curls or anything
yeah.
like that, there wasn't a variety. Like, the idea mm-hmm. now that you can get any kind of food and you can yeah. actually have a delicious cultural dish versus having, like, I don't know, just plain fried tofu and that's it.
Yeah. And that used to be like the option for vegans, right? It was
yeah.
like French fries and fried tofu.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you can actually like order a meal.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of the things that you make and what you eat or what you enjoy. I mean, I know it sounds like you have buns and...
So I make things. I love banh mi's. I've always loved it. I love carbs so much. I love carbs so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, you and me both.
Oh, it's so bad. And so, like, just the smell of, like, a... And I say this, like, all the time when I'm in the kitchen. Is like, when my chef, like, toasts a banh mi, I'm like, God, that smells so good. Like, I just... I don't know if it's the yeast and the gluten. It's just... it's so good.
You're just like, carb me up.
I'm ready. Give it to me. And I, you know, like, there's something comforting for me in eating, like... a banh mi, and I would have to say a really pretty phenomenal banh mi.
Yeah.
It's filled with kimchi, a kale kimchi.
I was just gonna ask you about fermenting and what your thought on that is and if you enjoy it.
I love fermentation. This is the first time I've ever ran like a kitchen. I've learned that like not a lot of people actually have hands-on experience with fermenting. I grew up fermenting with my mom because, you know, whatever was the cheap vegetable of the season, she'd buy a bunch of it and she'd ferment it. And it was an easy way for her to add flavor to, like, soups and stir fries and anything like that. So that's, like, I grew up fermenting. I felt like it's a great way to reuse, like, scraps vegetable scraps, things that you don't, you know, things that may not be like prime for fresh eating, but it's perfect for fermenting that's about to wilt. It's just, yeah, like everybody try it, do it. It's fun. Yeah, you can ferment anything.
When you say kale, and then do you ferment broccoli?
Yeah, I used to do a broccoli kimchi, but I don't do that anymore just because I just don't have the capacity at the moment to do so many things. But I also do all of the ferments for, like we ferment carrots and bean sprouts. Sometimes, like I take my green onions, the white parts, and I'll ferment that and use it in like sauces and in, you know, stir fries and scallions and things, or in, you know, different toppings and stuff like that too.
Yeah. The other thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, you mentioned your daughter and mm-hmm. being busy. What's your advice for being, you know, a business owner and a mom and striking that balance?
Oh, I don't know if I should be giving advice on this. I literally feel like I fail every day.
No, I mean, the inspiration for your business was about you and your daughter cooking together.
Yeah,
so
what was the question? Advice?
So, you know, someone who wants to do it all, like, how do you... I mean, does your daughter come in and still cook with you, for example?
Not in the kitchen, but she still does offer me... She comes and, like, hangs out at the shop. You know, I don't feel like I do it all. I do a lot that I want to do. And I don't do it all alone. Although I am a single mom. Kinsley's dad lives across the country. So it's been, you know, it's hard. But, you know, I do have a community of people who support me, you know, whether it be like my mom who will take Kinsley to school sometimes in the morning, or like my mom will pick her up from the babysitter, or my assistant who sometimes also picks up Kinsley, you know. But I think like understanding that if you're gonna do it all, that you can't do it all alone.
Being okay with asking for help.
I think like being okay at asking for help, it's something that I personally struggle with on a daily basis, you know. When you're raised by a single mom, you know, who's also a refugee and, you know, raised three kids, then you have like a really high bar of what like a mom should be doing. But understand that like asking for help is okay, you know.
Yeah.
And so I try to do that.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, the whole idea of community is really important. Mm-hmm. And it's not just your family, it's neighbors, it's people that you're working with. So along those lines, you know, I know that you really do care a lot about social justice issues as well, you know, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, about Black Lives Matter, about the recent, you know, actually not recent, it's been going on for a while, but the Asian harassment, hate crimes, things like that. So I guess something I'm always curious about, even myself as a business owner, I try to weave social justice into my business. Some people might not like that. I don't care.
Yeah.
It seems like you don't care either. So do you kind of want to just talk about that? How like your social justice heart and your business, they coincide.
They do. And I think that it should. I think when you're operating in a community, I think it's important to do what you can to also support that community. And Portland's community has showed up for my business in so many ways. And, like, I can say I'm thankful, like, 1,000 times. But unless I'm following that up with real action, it just doesn't seem true or authentic. Mm-hmm. Aside from it all, it's, when you get down to the core, it's like it's just the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't feel right to operate as if the world is fair and that people are not being unjustly killed by police every day. It is, you know, not... It's the right thing to do, you know, to speak up against that, you know. How can I have a team of, you know, Asian women, queer, Black women, and when something happens to the to their people that they care about, I'm not there to show up for them. Mm-hmm. It's just not, you know, it's not the human thing to do. And I think also as a vegan, you know, I'm vegan because I want to speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves, for any animal, and that includes humans alike. And so how can we operate as if everything's okay when Black and brown people are getting killed all the time? Like, and I figured if I lose my business because of, like, you know, my values, then I'll rebuild my business. But I can never rebuild my moral compass, and I will never get back the sleep I lost if I know that I could have spoken up for somebody who couldn't for themselves. You know, that you can never get back, you know. And so I joke with my staff all the time. I'm like, if people don't like what I say, then they can move on. And if I have to burn my business to the ground to stand up for what's right, then I'll do it. I built this business on $500, and I'll build it again if I have to.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, the other part of that, too, is people really like you and know you, and the people that don't get what you're doing or don't believe in that, they, like you said, they can go on their way. But, you know, I feel similar to that, that if you put your blood, sweat, and tears into something like your business, you can't be two different people. You can't be, you know, a really broad business that doesn't have ethics and it's just like, I'm here to make money. You know, And from what I understand, your business is all about you and your family and your culture. And so that's the only choice. The only choice is to do it exactly as who you are.
I know that if I do this business and it fails, it'll never feel like I failed because I did it in the most authentic way that I can possibly do it for who I am. And I stood up for my values, and, you know, I can't see any other way of doing business, you know. It's funny because I thought to myself, because, you know, I get these, like, hateful messages of people saying that, oh, this is all performative or blah, blah, blah. And so I self-reflect. I'm like, have I always been like this? Am I, you know, is this who I am? Am I pretending? Am I truly this person? And then I see these, like, time hops on Facebook of, like, years ago, and it's still, like, at me, like, just, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's me. You know, it's always been really hard for me to, like, not speak up when I see something.
Well, the thing is there are people who are performative, but, you know, if you're hiring diversely, you're selling a cultural product, you show up for Black Lives Matter and for the Asian community and for hunger, I think. I've seen that.
Yeah.
Then you're not performative. You're doing the thing. You're showing up.
Thank you. Yeah.
And there's always, that's what I've been realizing lately, is there's always going to be people who are not happy. It's not good enough. They're, you know, and sure, those are things we should hear about. We should reflect upon. But we just, it's sad. I mean, we live in a world where there's always going to be someone who is either not happy or we didn't do it right. We didn't do it enough.
I try to remind myself that, like, I have, like all of us, a lot of room to grow, you know? And so I feel like the self-reflection and stuff helps me to make sure that I'm walking the right path and providing the right type of support to the communities who need it, you know? I think everybody has been through a lot this year.
Sure.
And I always want to make sure that I'm offering the right type of help and the right type of support that our community really needs, because it's not about me. It's about, you know, us as a community.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing about it, I mean, you yourself are a woman of color. And, I mean, have you had any, you know, have you experienced discrimination yourself, I guess would be my question.
Yeah, I mean, from, you know, little microaggressions to lots of mansplaining to gaslighting to straight up, discrimination. I think, yeah, all of it, absolutely. You know, and I sometimes wonder if I'm now making myself a target and my staff and my team a target too, because of like my platform and what I speak up about. But, you know, if I succumb to that fear, then I would just let that other side win. So, you know, my response to the discrimination, personal discrimination and the personal hate, you know, I was getting messages from people telling me like to die. And I was getting,
because of your messages, or
because of
your social justice related messages?
Yeah. It was on the heels of the Atlanta shooting and me speaking up about the rise in anti-Asian hate in America. And then it was just like, it's interesting because, like, people really don't like a lot of people don't really like seeing an Asian woman be vocal about injustices against herself.
But the crazy thing is the message to you is the exact example of hate, you know? But I also think that, like you said, the risk is important because representation matters. Mm-hmm. So there's a young Asian girl, whether it's your daughter or someone else, who's seeing you.
Yeah.
Not only as a single mother who's a business owner and, you know, a badass one, but is seeing you speak up and to know that that's okay to have a voice and to have representation. So that's what's needed for the youth, is to see people who are in that position.
Absolutely. And I think, like, I don't know if any real systematic change is going to happen in my lifetime. I really hope it does. But I know that if we empower the next generation with the tools and the vision and the confidence to be able to continue the fight, I know that they can do it. You know, the next generation is way better than us. You know, and I hope that, like, me speaking up and taking a stand will help them feel empowered and know that, like, they're not alone.
Yeah, and if it's not you, it'll be your daughter who will be a YouTube or TikTok sensation.
Yeah, she's moved on from YouTube to TikTok. TikTok's, like, the thing now, I guess.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you we have 5 questions that I ask every guest. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, if this wasn't your focus right now, what would be your passion project or your focus?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, would you still be doing hair regularly?
And the pandemic would be still happening. Yeah, I would still be doing hair, but I honestly, like, I think I would be doing hair and expanding my content creation. And I love fashion. I've always been obsessed with fashion, and even when I was, like, when I was in the fifth grade, I, like, told myself, I'm going to be a fashion designer. That never happened.
Your earrings are amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
They're like a clip and a chain.
Yeah, thank you. But I'm going to, I would have to say, still be doing hair and hopefully, like, maybe doing with something with more fashion styling and stuff is what I hope I would be doing.
Well, maybe when your sister moves up here.
Oh, well, yeah, we've actually discussed that.
So. What's something in your life other than your given or chosen family that you know will always bring you joy?
Oh, my gosh. Animals. Absolutely. Animals. Like, my dog right now is, she's the sweetest thing. And, yeah, and even, like, I, so it's really funny because, like, I have friends who are, like, they laugh because sometimes when they talk to me, they joke because I'll occasionally see a squirrel and I literally be like, oh my God, squirrel! Every time. It doesn't fail me. I have this squirrel that comes into my, and it's just, I just animals. Like, I'm super excited because Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary, they had rescued a bunch of pigs a couple of summers ago and they just opened up their farm for volunteers again. And so I'm super excited to get back there and just, like, be on the farm with all the animals again. I hope I can own. That's my passion project. I would be working on owning a freaking farm sanctuary. Yeah, that's what
be,
I would want.
That'd be cool. What are you binge watching or reading right now?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm not binge reading anything because I'm really bad at that. But I am binge watching Pose again.
Yeah, Pose is great.
It is so amazing. I love it. And I just wanted to see some beautiful people. I just needed it. And Pose always gives me, like...
You're ready for the ball fashion?
Yes.
Extravaganza.
I know.
And there's one more season.
One more,
I think,
yeah.
And that's it.
One more season. I know. I'm super excited. I'm, like, ready for ball season. Ready.
Yeah. I mean, when the pandemic bowl's over, it'd be really fun to have balls with themes.
Yes. I'm like, can we do something? I would totally be here for it.
When the world gets back to normal or whatever normal is post-pandemic, where would you like to travel?
Oh, I would love to travel back. I really want to travel back to Vietnam. My dream would be to actually open, like, a Mama Deep Vietnam and, like, spend half the year there, half the year here. And, like, you know, I don't know. I always had this, like, I was like, oh, dude, the world would be, like, a nonprofit that would help with, like, sustainable farming, and I could, like, start in Vietnam. So that's, like, that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Travel to Vietnam.
And if you were to give a TED Talk, what would you talk about?
Oh, a TED Talk? Wow. I would talk about what not to do during a pandemic. No. God, I don't know how much of an expert I am in anything that would be worth a TED Talk. I think how to be a single mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
How to survive as a single mom would be my TED Talk.
Well, or scrapping together $500 and opening a business.
How to turn a business with your last $500.
Yeah.
My mom was really questioning me the whole time. She was really scared for me.
Yeah, in what regard, though?
I think for her, it's hard for the older generation to, it's just not a traditional way of opening a restaurant. You know, and opening a food business. And she, you know, it's hard work. And she's not on Instagram. She didn't know, like, the type of buzz that was building up for it. All she saw was that I was, like, working, you know, 18-hour days and, like...
Making vegan pork belly.
Making vegan pork belly and, like, you know, barely scraping by. But... So, yeah, and I think I think she got less worried when she like saw me on Portland Monthly. She was like, oh, okay, okay. Yeah. But yeah, for, I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's my mom.
Hopefully it's more than just okay. She said, congratulations, you're doing a good job.
Yeah. No, she said, good, good.
Yeah. Okay, and then the last part of this is if you could give some shout outs to organizations that you think are doing great things in the community.
Oh my gosh, there are so many wonderful organizations. Definitely, like, one that's near and dear, of course, is Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary. They're amazing folks over there. They're a farm sanctuary, and a couple years ago, they rescued over 250 pigs and took them in and helped out. Yeah, just doing amazing work over there. Also Feed the Mass. I work with them off and on just when my schedule allows. But, you know, last year, you know, through the pandemic and through the wildfires, they were offering meals to the community.
Yeah, Jacobson was a guest on this podcast too. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. Yes, Jacobson is amazing. And what he's doing with Feed the Mass is really awesome. And I really hope that he can continue his work there. Like, I really hope he's really doing amazing things. And, you know, Equitable Giving Circle, they've been doing a lot of really, like, amazing work. And also Free Fridge. You know, Free Fridge has been a really great mutual aid group here. And they have, you know, fridges and food pantries all over the city and town where you can just drop things, just take what you need and leave what you can. Another organization, Everybody Bleeds, is another mutual aid org, and they're providing, you know, feminine hygiene products in the free fridge pantries and things like that for the community. And these are things that, you know, we take for granted as people who are housed, and, you know, it's a necessity that people should not have to be concerned about where their next, you know, supplies are going to come from. So yeah, if anyone's listening, those are great organizations to look up in.
That's, you know, great. And then the last thing is, how can people find you online, but also how can people find you in terms of getting all your delicious food?
So I am on 1414 Southeast Morrison Street. I'm open Thursday through Sunday. I run a really small staff right now just due to quarantine. So the best way to get the most up-to-date hours and like menu is through my Instagram, which is at mama.dut.foods. And, yeah, I also have a Facebook, but look me up on Instagram instead. Slide into my DMs.
There you go. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah, and thanks, Michael.
Yeah,
this was cool.
Keep doing all the great work and making delicious food.
Thank you. Thank you. I am really excited. So thanks for having me. This was fun.
A very big thank you to Chef Tui Pham for being on this episode of the show. To find out more about Mama Doot Foods, the plant-based Vietnamese cuisine, check out mamadutfoods.com. We want to give another shout-out to our friends at X-Ray FM. You can see all the great things they're doing for our community by visiting xray.fm. And of course, a very big thank you to you for checking out this episode of the podcast. Be sure not to miss any of our upcoming guests by subscribing to the podcast on your favorite streaming service. You can also visit alloftheyourbusinesspodcast.com for previous episodes, custom gear, and if you happen to know anybody that you think would be a great fit for the podcast, click our contact page and let us know. All of Your Business was recorded at JJT Studios and edited at Track 11 Music.